listening to the Broadcast Basement On Demand Radio Network.
It's the podcast in the Broadcast Basement.
Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day it's different. They change, but they don't know what they want. All they do is change, yeah, yeah, yeah. Going left, going right, travel day, travel night, that's where we'll go. No excuses, no goodbyes, no one cries, no one lies, we'll never know.
Rang the bell in the Pirates clubhouse last night. Actually, to tell you the truth, the bad part is I fell asleep in probably about the sixth inning last night. We almost tie it back up in the eighth inning. Josh Bell home run. Melky did something good for once. And then I wake up this morning and I'm like looking through the stuff and it's like Crick's out for the rest of the season. So you're like looking into it deeper. I get on Twitter. Come to find out, Crick and Vasquez get into it last night. Like, they actually, like, full force get into it. Vasquez has got some, like, got some swelling on his nose, some bandages. And Crick has a season ending, and he had to get his finger operated on. It's like, what, like, a tendon in his finger is torn or something from a fight that was eventually broken up. And I'm thinking to myself, is this my team? Like, what is going on
here?
It's
a disaster. I mean, like that, this is what happens on bad teams. This is what happens on bad teams with bad leadership and bad management. That's what this is. Because everything I read is that this has been building with these two guys.
Yeah, and this isn't like the first time that Crick's got in trouble for fighting. I mean, this is his third incident. The first incident is he got into it with the bullpen coach, guy named... Rojas, who's been there for like 9 years, has never had like any issues whatsoever, is the guy that's supposed to be like, you know, the bullpen guy. Like, these guys like love him and everything. He ends up getting into it with him. It was like back at the end of June, and there's an altercation between Crick and Rojas where Rojas pushes him and gets like a 2-game suspension. But this was all over Crick trying to get into it with Vasquez because he thinks that Vasquez, like, you know, gets some sort of special treatment. He gets favored. He's joking around too much and all this kind of other stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, you know what, Crick? In my eyes, I go by the numbers. That's like my thing, is I go by the numbers. And before the All-Star break, Crick wasn't even having a good year to begin with. So this was like when all this stuff's going on. I'm just going to run down just a couple numbers here real quick. He was got a 3.23 ERA, got 38 Ks, you know, 25 base on balls, a 1.5 whip for a reliever. You want to see that a little bit closer to one for a reliever. I mean, absolutely. And he's not pitching great. Then you turn a corner and you're like, okay, how should we treat Vasquez? Vasquez before the All-Star break, he's got a 2.11 ERA, 60 Ks, 10 base on balls, and a 1.148 whip. Okay.
So you're saying the guy that should be released like right now is Crick.
I mean, that's the thing is, and luckily, I mean, right now it's like they said season ending injury. I mean, there's only a few weeks left, but my thing is, and he's the guy that, I mean, we had the discussion about him and old Puig, that he's like out there like thrusting his hips at Puig and gets like a 3-game suspension, like trying to fight that dude. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this is your three strikes, you're out. Three strikes, you're gone. You're not even pitching that great. I mean, his ERA after the All-Star break is 7.85 with a 1.636 whip. I mean, gone.
Here's the thing. He seems like an unhinged individual. And I'm talking about Crick. When you take the body of work, at least what you can see as somebody that watches him as a fan in that fight with Puig and the Cincinnati Reds on the day that Puig gets traded to the Indians at the trade deadline, it's like the best fight of the year. And then you hear this story as well, where it sounds like he started this thing and then he hurts himself in the middle of the fight. And it's because he's got an issue with another guy, I don't know, who enjoys breathing air and living his life. It just seems to me like there's something unhinged about Kyle Crick. The thrusting at Yasiel Puig, just the way he carried himself even in that fight, like, he just seemed unhinged there. And he got made fun of a lot, even in the national media, like, who is this guy? And he was like a major part of that entire thing going bad. And then he does this thing here. It really tells you a lot about him. And I you can't see him in a Pirates uniform next year.
No, and he started making excuses from the get-go. He's like, well, Felipe swung first, so I was like just defending myself and all this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, the stuff that you've proved, that you've been in all of these altercations, and Felipe's like that guy that before the games, he's out taking pictures with fans, like he's joking in the bullpen and stuff. And here's the thing is, believe me, I mean, everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to be on a winning team. But Felipe's thing, his thing is, you know what? You put me in any position, I want to pitch, I want to do this, I'm an elite closer. He never mentions any of that type of stuff. He's just like, I just want to play, I like to have fun, like to joke around with the guys, different stuff like that. And he's backing it up with the numbers. I mean, it's insane. I mean, I know you're a huge fan of WHIP. He has a .508 WHIP since the All-Star break. I mean, the dude is dealing.
Right.
It's not even a question. So if he wants to like goof around with some guys in the clubhouse or something, I could care less.
Yeah, he's doing his job.
Yeah.
It's not like, look, if he was doing a bad job and the guy's like happy-go-lucky and after a loss, or you think he needs to be taking things more seriously even though the team is eliminated, okay, if he's doing a bad job, I could see somebody saying, hey, man, don't act like that. But the guy's doing his job. And he's doing it at an elite level. And, you know, I look, to me, this whole thing is, again, an indictment on who's in charge of the team. Not a lot of Major League Baseball teams are going to allow both these guys to still coexist. I would think most of them are going to get rid of a guy like Crick instead, you know, because one, because of performance, two, because of the thrusting and the crazy. I mean, I'm just saying what the perception is. I don't know if that's the case. Maybe he didn't start the fight. Maybe he's the innocent victim. Who knows? But if this is going on, I mean, think about this. We've been talking about this ever since we started the show. Fighting constantly with other teams. Fighting inside of the clubhouse. Falling apart after the All-Star break. This is not healthy. This is poison. This team is poisoned internally. Something needs to happen. You got fired up because somebody sat there and basically like applauded the general manager for how he was handling
it. Oh, my God. Called it a feather
in his cap. And I was like, I have
this quote right in front of me. And I was like, Dejan Kovacevic, DK Sports. I'm like,
I want to read the full tweet that you responded to. And then I want to read the response. Okay. So that we can give everybody what happened on Twitter today. Here's from DK. On Crick versus Vasquez, I like and respect both a lot, but they're as different gets. Vasquez loves to have fun and do things his way. Crick often finds that unfair, and he's got the low boiling temperature. Definitely not an out of nowhere incident. It just basically seems like Crick doesn't like fun, doesn't like the fact that somebody's doing better than him and has a quick temper. That's like the nicest way somebody could say that. I'll continue. Yeah. When a team has a catastrophically bad 2 months, lots of bad blood will arise. I've seen and heard it off the record myself. That part's normal. What's not normal is being that bad for so long, and that's on the front office for assembling this roster. That said, it's an actual feather in Neil Huntington's cap to be this forthright about the incident. He could have concocted a zillion BS reasons for Crick's finger to have been hurt. Instead, he put both players on public blast for their bad behavior. Huge departure from their norm. Now, before we get into your response on that, I think that he's kind of saying, well, at least he didn't lie about it. But what you're saying there is you're saying, well, at least he didn't do the absolute wrong thing. In this day and age, there's no way that story doesn't eventually come out. If it isn't going to come out now, it's going to come out later. The first time one guy leaves the team, it comes out for the other guy. I just think about what we saw earlier this year between two teams with the Washington Nationals and I want to say it was the New York Mets. And the bad blood spilling over from when Adam Eaton and Todd Frazier were teammates on another team years before. The story eventually gets out. The entire story came to light, and that story was kept under wraps as tight as it could be kept. There were media members who didn't give out all the details of the initial problems between those two players when they were on that team. But when it flared back up again, eventually the story came out. Neil Huntington would have been doing a terrible disservice to himself, his professional career, the Pittsburgh Pirates, if he would have come up with some ridiculous reason or tried to hide it. So I think giving him credit for not doing the dumb thing, I don't want to give a guy credit for that. That's like saying, hey, at least you put the car in park after you ran over the body. You know, I don't want to give credit for what he's done.
Well, I was upset by the feather in the cap is the main reason for that was what you're saying is I did not want him to get any credit for it. It seemed like that DK was kind of backing off of, like, he's like saying, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. But we got to give Neil Huntington some credit. Put a feather in his cap for doing the right thing. And I'm thinking to myself, he didn't do the right thing with Keone Kella when he got suspended. And we find out that he basically berated Hurdle and tried to go after another member of the staff. And that didn't come out until later on. They just basically tried to brush it under the rug. The same thing with the Crick incident with Rojas. It was brushed under the rug as just some normal, you know, he didn't do what he was supposed to do as a bullpen coach. It was like the integrity of his contract and all this kind of stuff. And then it comes out later. So on this one, I think if Crick doesn't get injured and doesn't have the season-ending injury, I think we don't even hear about this. I think if he did not have to explain that there was, you know, some guy being out for the rest of the season with like a torn, he could have came up with a zillion, bazillion, gazillion reasons to, you know, BS this story or whatever. If Crick's not hurt, the story doesn't come out. So when he is, you know, saying like the feather in the cap, it's like, no, there's no reason to give him any credit for doing anything right in this. A guy got injured for one of the dumbest reasons imaginable, and he had to give a reason for it. It's not a feather in his cap. It's just another like thing in the long line of mistakes and stuff that shouldn't have been happening to begin with. Why is Crick coming back after Puig? Why is Crick coming back after he's like with Rojas? And you said it's building and building and building. He should know his team. He should know the temperament of his team as a general manager. And if he's not getting it from the coach, then the coach needs to go too. I mean, there's just a lot of reasons why that just kind of like basically set me off.
There's no such thing as a losing team that's going through things like this. And it gets better before guys are jettisoned from the team. Lots of people have to leave. When the clubhouse is poisoned like this, you have to make massive changes to change the culture of the clubhouse. If you're a winning team and you've got a bunch of guys, like let's say you're the Yankees in the 70s, okay, and Reggie Jackson just doesn't get along with a couple of guys, and there's a few arguments going on, and Billy Martin's volatile, but they're winning championships. All right, you put up with that. It'll eventually crash and burn like it did, but you put up with that. And when it's a bad team that's doing that, that just makes things worse. There's no way that a bad team all of a sudden becomes a good team born out of these kind of problems inside the clubhouse. If your team is bad and you're having clubhouse issues, something good is not going to grow out of that. Something definitely has to change. The more I miss, the more I forget.
There's toxicity in the clubhouse. There is toxicity in the clubhouse. There's a lot of things that can be done to change that toxicity, removing players that are toxic.
You change the coach.
And removing the coach. You change the coach who's allowing the toxicity to happen.
The manager that has taught his team to pick fights with people. Okay? His entire philosophy is nearly, it's almost dangerous at times where he's throwing at people's, guys are throwing at people's heads because he thinks that, like, you know, we're still in the league that Ty Cobb played in. And he has a dangerous way of looking at the game, and his guys handle their business in a dangerous way. I think around the league, the Pirates are not looked at in very high esteem by other players, by the way that you got to go play Pittsburgh and you don't know what are they going to pull. I mean, look, if you're in the middle of something every once in a while, fine, but the Pirates have been the epicenter of brawls, problems with umpires, shouting matches between managers all season long. And it was like that a little bit last year, and it continues to grow, and now you have it happening inside of your clubhouse. This all starts with the guy who's in charge, and until the guy that's at the helm is not there anymore, this will continue. And somebody can sit there and say, well, you guys aren't in the clubhouse, you don't know. Well, whatever. And find me a team where a fight broke out while the team was losing in a bad season, and things got better without major changes. This is the indicator. This is like when your kid has a fever, you know, when your kid walks up and looks a little tired and lays on the couch and you're like, well, that isn't normal. He's normally hyperactive. That's the first indication he's got the flu. This is the first indication this team is sick. And there's, it ain't going away because you ignore it and you just go, oh, we'll just put him to bed. I'm sure he'll be fine tomorrow. Nope. Fever's going to keep going. You're going to eventually have to give him medicine. And that's what this is. That's at least how I read this situation.
Yeah, and especially when you have a guy like Vasquez, who it just seems like just enjoys playing baseball. You're talking about a kid. He's kind of like a little kid to a degree, because he just enjoys the game. But he's also, like I said, and we've talked about, one of the elite closers in the game. He's also probably the best pitcher on our team. And you have a guy who has been struggling all year and has become, you know, one of the worst pitchers on our team, especially in the bullpen. And you got him picking a fight with him. It's around frustration. It's around all this kind of other stuff. Guess what? If it's going to change, Crick gone, Hurdle gone, Vasquez, I think he's leading the charge for the clubhouse in the right direction to basically say, hey, guys, we got some young guys in here. We have to still have some sort of fun with this. If that doesn't happen, then we're going to go down a dark path. And Crick, on his own, just like caught behind the wheel and took the team down a dark path last night. Just extremely frustrating to be a Pirates fan, especially when it's all over, you know, just every single sports network, where this is my team. This is the team that I want to get behind. And everything that comes out recently, since pretty much the end of May, after, you know, Josh Bell went into his little slump and, you know, we started struggling a little bit, everything that has come out has been negative. And it's like, what are the Pirates going to do about it? And so far, it's been nothing. Their idea has been to, just like you said, just let the kid sit there and get sicker and sicker and say, okay, he's going to heal himself. This right. Team's not going to heal itself.
No, I don't think it is. And you know what's interesting here is that take another look at this. Let's say Vasquez is a problem. If he's a problem, and you had teams that were involved wanting to get him at the trade deadline, you would have and should have taken whatever was the best offer on the table right on July 31st, because you just want to get rid of him because he's a problem. See what I'm saying? I don't think that they've demonstrated as a team that they find him to be a problem, because I think there would have been even more urgency to move him at the trade deadline, like it was being considered. That they obviously value him to a point where they aren't trying to get him off the team. So if the team values him to that point, again, it points to the idea that he's probably the guy in the right here, or he's probably the guy that's not the problem. But then you have to turn around and you have to say, okay, where does this come from? And how is it that that management doesn't see this coming between these two guys? These two guys didn't have just one fight. That tweet that we read, this was a matter of time. That alludes to me something far more, that this was building. You got to pay attention to what's going on inside of your own house. I don't care if you're the manager of a baseball team or you're managing the Eaton Park. And you're like, you know, I got one waitress and another waitress that aren't getting along with each other, and eventually one of them's going to throw a bowl of soup at the other one. Like, you kind of have to pay attention. And managers have to do that if they're working in a warehouse for Amazon or, you know, some shipping company. They got to pay attention. This guy over here with the box cutters really hates this guy over here with the box cutters. Maybe we should put him someplace else before they start using the box cutters at each other. That's what managers do in workplaces where people come into contact with each other all the time and aren't getting along. What's this guy doing? Besides saying being that pitcher because of the unwritten rules of baseball, that's the only thing he seems to be very good at.
If he's involved in an altercation with Kiyonikawa, like we talked about earlier in the show, if he's, you know, allowing Crick and the bullpen coach to get in an altercation back at the end of June, and it's now, you know, that the altercation between Vasquez and Crick happens on, you know, the 10th of September, whatever should have been done by a competent manager, a competent staff, anything, general manager, anybody, it should have been squashed after you suspend your bullpen coach. Or if it starts to resurface again, you either separate the guys or you look at it and say, you know what, Crick, you're not that good. Why are we holding on to you? You're gone.
Imagine if it would have been Vasquez with a hand injury. And there was a concern about whether or not he'd be available to start the year next year. Think about that. Imagine if it would have been the other way. How furious would you be right now? How much more angry would you be at the inability for them to see this and make sure that their locker room's in order? And that right there, if anybody's sitting there saying it's not a big deal, that's really the reason why this is probably a big deal.
I mean, like, what if Vasquez ends up with some sort of concussion issues or something from being punched in the face? I mean, or whatever it would be. It's like you're letting who's supposed to be like your elite closer, who's number one, either your biggest trade chip, him and Marte, in the offseason after the Dodgers blow it again, you know, with their bullpen. That's what, you know, everybody's got their fingers crossed for. All the Pirates fans are like, oh, come on, Dodgers, make it to the World Series and blow it again. So you got Vasquez there. Or he's your elite closer for at least like the next like 2 or 3 years with his contract for what they want to be a winning ball club. And you're letting him either get attacked, be attacked, whatever it would be, and doing absolutely nothing about it. So he's either your trade chip to get to the future, or he is your closer of the future. And there's no way he should be involved in a situation like this, or should have ever got to this point.
You posted a poll recently on, I want to say it was on Twitter. It could have been on Facebook. You can, where the Bucks in the Basement is available on, you can get it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, follow those pages. Make sure you're subscribing to the show. Hit the subscribe button on whatever player you're listening to. You can go directly to bucksinthebasement.com. Share the show with your friends. Little comment, little rating on whatever player. That helps as well. You want this to grow. You want this to spread. You want to be able to keep talking Pirates baseball. You had a thing up about Josh Bell saying, if given the choice, would you be okay with him playing in right field or would you want him to stay at first base? What was it? Huntington kind of like alluded that this could happen. And what are your thoughts on this?
Well, the biggest thing was, is it was something from Jason Mackey. I think he writes for the PG. He said that when asked that Neil Huntington, you know, did not shoot down the possibility of Bell returning to the outfield, at least on a part-time basis. And then, I mean, he also said, you know, let's see what happens with Polanco. We don't really want to walk down that path if, you know, Polanco is going to be our, you know, full-time right fielder coming there. So I just wanted to get, you know, everybody's kind of inclination. And I think my last poll that I put out made some people kind of mad. So I felt like this was like a better general poll to see where should Josh Bell be at if he's going to be here for the future. And at the time of this recording, I think we have about, you know, 275 votes or something. And 67% said first base only. And 33% said, you know, right field, part-time/full-time. And I don't know if it was Huntington. He does this show, and we talk about this before, where he does it on Sundays, where he sits down and he talks to Greg Brown from, you know, one of our announcers. And he's pretty open and honest about stuff. And people are saying like how bad, you know, Josh Bell's defense is at first base and he's a liability. And he was pretty much asked a question like, would you even consider, you know, moving him back to the, you know, right field position? That was his natural position when he came into the league. And he wasn't, I don't know if he was saying like, okay, this is something we're definitely thinking of. But he's definitely, I think he's been thinking about it as like a possibility recently. And for me, I mean, I'll let you know, I mean, I vote on my own polls. I mean, but I voted first base only. And number one is because of arm strength. Like Josh Bell can barely throw from first base to third base without making an error. And the other piece is that, I mean, since he's been in the league, I mean, he's been in the league since, you know, he came in. His rookie year was 2016, so, I mean, we're looking at 3 years in the league. I mean, you can look at his body type now. Dude's gotten a little bit more meat on his bones, become more of like a power hitter and stuff like that. I don't know. I don't even know what his range would be like in right field. And it's not even like that his defense is, in my eyes, terrible. He's not a great fielding first baseman, but in my eyes, his, you know, his RBI totals, his home runs, and everything else he brings to the team, I would much rather see him be in the first base role than ever think about moving him back out to the outfield.
Now, here's the thing. If he were to go to the outfield, who would play first?
I mean, right now it would be probably a split between like Jose Osuna and Colin Moran, who are already splitting time at third base. And it's not like that.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that, yeah. Because here's the thing. What you want to do is you want to sit there and you want to say, okay, well, who are the free agents that are going to be available in the offseason? There's a lot of outfielders. And a lot of first basemen. Not a lot of guys you can put over first base unless you're going to convert somebody into a first baseman. Like all of a sudden you're going to sit there and you're going to go get a guy like Josh Donaldson and say, will you play first base? And can you convince him to go and do that? But outfielder-wise, there's guys like Puig. There's guys like Marcell Ozuna. There's guys like, let's see, who else we got here? You could make the argument that J.D. Martinez, if he opts out, could still go out and play in the outfield. And, you know, and you might be able to say, okay, I know you're a DH in the American League, but come back and play off and, you know, play the field in the National League. There are at least a few options that are floating out there. Nicholas Castellanos, there's an outfielder that's going to be available as a free agent. There's plenty of outfielders. Not a lot of guys you'd probably plug in at first base, you know? So that's why I think it would be hard to say we want to move him unless you acquired somebody in a deal or had some idea of what you were going to put at first base, because you need production from that position.
Yeah, and it's not like the Pirates have ever shown that they've been willing to go out and get, like, one of those, you know, top-notch first base, you know, candidates or somebody's a free agent.
Jose Abreu is going to be available technically with the Chicago White Sox, but he's actually sat there and said in multiple interviews that he's so excited about what's going on with the White Sox that he is willing to take whatever they'll give him to stay with the White Sox.
Like
he's
worst negotiator ever.
Worst negotiator in the history of negotiating. But then on the other hand, compared to what's going on in the Pirates clubhouse, that shows how healthy a team that is going to probably end up with about 73 wins this year if they're lucky. Somewhere between 70 and 75 wins they're probably going to end up this year. They're not going anywhere, but their clubhouse is so healthy. There's no fights going on, and guys are like, I'll take anything to get back into this clubhouse. You know what I'm saying?
Because they can see the direction it's going.
There are good places that guys want to go and play, and it doesn't matter if they're winning or not, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing is I don't even know why it was even like, I guess it was probably kind of a discussion more because of Gregory Polanco's injury. And he's got the shoulder injury. He just got a shot in the arm. And, you know, was ruled out for the rest of the season. And they're thinking who's gonna play right field next year. And I think the option is definitely not Josh Bell going back out there. People want him to go back out there to kind of open the spot for Will Craig at first base. We talked about him on the last show. He had a regression and probably, you know, may need to start, you know, the first half of the season and see if he can get something going in Triple A before then. But I mean, at this point in time, I mean, Josh Bell's your first baseman. You got Brian Reynolds out in left field. Starling Marte's your center fielder. I mean, I think you could put, like you said, there's a decent amount of free agents out there. If Jason Martin wouldn't have got hurt, we could have saw what he had to play in right field for next year. I think it should be a fairly I mean, easy position to fill. I mean, they had Kramer playing left field the other night. Like, you could put Kramer plays right field.
Another show is wrapped up. Another show's in the books. Another show is wrapped up. And then by the looks, it's going to be a good one. And we'll see you next week. And the nude is basement. And the nude is basement. Another show is wrapped up. Another show is wrapped up. Another show is wrapped up. And it's in the books. Another show is wrapped up. Another show is wrapped up. And by the looks, it's gonna be a good one. Nude is basement. Broadcast basement. The nudist basement. The broad basement.
Slancha. That was like Dropkick Murphys or something, right? I felt like it.